Second step, you're going to become a manager and you're going to go in now with a primary aim, which means you have a center of gravity, which essentially describes what you believe in, what you believe life should be. You have a philosophy of life. You have a purpose of life. You're essentially saying to me, my God, Michael, give me a break. What difference does that make to them? It doesn't make any difference to them. It makes a difference to you. What their difference is irrelevant. What your difference is the whole ball game. What I'm suggesting is Moses gave up his life in pursuit of something which was completely empty at the outset. It wasn't even real. And he spent 22 years looking for something that was false. Sat with the highest producing insurance agent, the largest insurance company in the world, at an awards banquet. The fellow just gotten the award. He's 58 years old, just gotten the award as the top producing agent of the year. And he had gotten the award the year before the same. And he'd gotten the award the year before the same. This guy always got the top producing agent of the year award, and he's 58 years old. And been in the business for over 30 years. We're seated at the table eating the rubber chicken. And he had a drink and I had a drink and digesting the rubber chicken, having another drink. And all the conversation up to that point, you know how those things are. You just sort of fill in the void. You know, he talks about this, you talk about that. Nobody's really talking to anybody. You know what I'm talking about? You just sort of talk, small talk, chat, you know, going on. I'm leaving that night. I'm off to someplace else, to another rubber chicken and another guy. Now, please understand, there's no cynicism in this at all. Guy suddenly turns to me out of the blue. Swear to God, out of the blue. He never could have anticipated, because suddenly I'm sitting in front of a guy and there's a different person in front of me. His eyes shine. And he asked me the question I asked earlier. He said, Michael, if I'm so damn good, how come I feel so bad? And in the moment of looking in that man's eyes, you knew the whole story. And now I got to do that next year. And it doesn't mean anything. The only problem is I'm getting older. Don't take this lightly. To the degree you shine this on, you shine yourself on. And let me tell you how bad it is. We shine ourselves on every day of our lives. People who seem to take themselves most seriously are shining themselves on. Don't tell me you don't. Because if you heard me in this moment, I swear to God, if you heard me in this moment, you'd be writing down on that piece of paper, do this tonight, even if it kills you. Do it. Because if you don't do it tonight, you'll not do it tomorrow. And that will be 2 days you'll never see again. What does it take, a rabbi friend of mine said, for people to get a sense of awe? What does it take for people to get a sense of awe of the gift, the miracle that we've been given, a life we don't even know what it means? And we spend it like it's change. So the manager of tomorrow better have his own center of gravity, because I'm telling you, to the degree you do not choose your own center of gravity, your own purpose, they will choose it for you. And you deserve it. You deserve it. You deserve to be a slave in a world that's only willing to enslave you. You deserve to be manipulated. If you're unwilling to make a choice, you deserve to give up your life if you're unwilling to seize the day. You deserve everything you got if you don't choose better. And I'm telling you, there's one choice to be made, and this is the choice. Who am I? What do I want? And ask it again and again and again and again and again and again, and do not satisfy yourself with breezy answers. The breezy answer will destroy your life. You cannot expect from someone else what you won't give yourself. You cannot expect the company you work for to care more about you than you do. You cannot expect the company you work for to give you more than what you're willing to give yourself. You cannot expect the company you work for to care about your interests if you don't know what they are. This is not a negotiation. This is a commitment. So that's the first step. And you'll understand when we get to the second one why this is so damned important. Because without that, there's nothing. All the rest of it is just stuff. You know, all the rest of it is the seven steps to, you know, the five steps to, you know, the 14 ones to do, you know, how to manipulate your mother to get to your father, you know, but, you know, all this stuff. I even saw an ad, I swear to God, in an in-flight magazine. This ad in an in-flight magazine said, show up at the Los Angeles Hilton, the bang, the bang, the bang, the bang, to learn the secrets. Learn the secrets of how to manipulate anybody to give you anything. One day only. And then it listed the stars who were going to appear at that. And how this guy got 400 nurses to do illegal acts in a hospital. Oh, God, I got to learn that one. You hear me? Without a center of gravity, you gravitate to anything. To what? Get rich, get this, get that, get ever, get over, get in, get out, whatever. You gravitate to everything. Everything becomes a distraction, an unhealthy distraction from yourself. Second step. In what? A management development program. What I call your strategic objective. Now, this is why you'll see the primary aim is so important. A manager's strategic objective is the strategic objective of the company they work for. Your strategic objective is in alignment with the strategic objective of the company you work for, because your role in the enterprise is to create a business that manifests the entrepreneurial vision of the company. The manager then, in relationship to the entrepreneur, is there to fulfill the strategic objective of the company of which they're a part. Now, let me tell you why the primary aim is so important. Because before you commit yourself wholeheartedly to someone else's strategic objective, you better know what your primary aim is. It's called values. And understand, you're not there to be judged. The company is. Hear that from an entrepreneur. I know that the people who come into my business must judge my vision to either find it full or to find it wanting. And I expect them to go through that process, because until they do, there's no relationship possible. I call it management by agreement. There's no relationship possible. And so effectively, your strategic objective is the strategic objective of the company you have now become a manager for. Because you're accountable for what? If the entrepreneur of the business is accountable for the vision, you're accountable for the business. And what is the business? The business is the mechanism through which the vision is manifested in real life. You're there to manifest the vision in real life. That is the singular role of a manager. To manifest the vision, the entrepreneurial vision, in real life. Now, do you see why the vision and the clarity of it is so important? To the degree the clarity of the vision is unclear, to the degree that there is no clarity of vision, to the degree it's fuzzy, muddy, confused, fluctuating, empty, devoid of purpose, devoid of passion, devoid of focus. Can you see how difficult it would be to be a manager in such an organization? Has anybody ever been a manager in such an organization? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? 1 minute it's this, 1 minute it's that. It's John Moses. Right? John Moses figured something wrong with him. Hell, there's got to be something wrong with me. Everybody's told me that all my life. My father did, my mother did. My first boss did, my second boss did. They must be right. They know something more than I do. Who am I to know? Nothing wrong with you. Strategic objective is the vision of the organization of which you're a part and for which you're now accountable to manifest. In what? To manifest as a process. To manifest as a system. Every single business in the world is a system. It's either a dysfunctional system or a functional system, but it is a system. There is stuff being done in every business systemically, in either a fragmented way or an integrated way, in either a focused way or an unfocused way, in either a healthy way or an unhealthy way. But it is a system. One could describe it. One could write out how it works. If one were to go into any business, one could describe the system as it's operating. We typically call that the culture of the business. But it's more than the culture of the business. It is the acts of a business and the way in which acts are performed in a business. And effectively, that is describable every place you go. Unfortunately, because we have done that describing, we've been inside of over 300,000 small businesses. Let me tell you that the operating reality of 99% of all the businesses we've seen is complete, unadulterated chaos. Nobody knows anything. And everybody has abdicated accountability to somebody else. Abdicated accountability to somebody else. What happened? That's the question that's going on in most business. Well, what happened? Well, and then the song, you know, tap dance, and you know, we do all that. What happened? Well, I get it. Okay, I get it. Right, I get it. That's the other thing that goes on. That's the other tap dance. Oh, I got it. Right, right. Now I better explain it to whom? I don't know. You know, I mean, who am I going to explain it to? The first person who asks. What happened to Murray? Geez, I don't know. Guy must be sick. Why? Well, he's not doing very much. Well, better get somebody else. And okay, you got it. Let's re-engineer Murray. So the strategic objective of the business is evoked through a system. We're going to show you what a system looks like in just a moment. But the strategic objective is the vision of the business, which is the promise of the business, which is the purpose of the business, which is the one thing we're here to do as an enterprise. Anybody remember that one thing? Anybody ever see City Slickers? Remember that movie, Jack Palance? Jack Palance said there's one thing. Billy Crystal said, what's that? He said, that's for you to find out, but there's only one thing. Great book called Focus. Said you better do one thing, and you better do that one thing well, and you better do that one thing better than anybody else is doing that one thing. Because if you don't know what that one thing is, and you ain't doing that one thing, you're going to be doing two things. And a company that does two things is less effective than a company that does one thing. And a company that does three things is less effective than a company doing two things. And a company that does 10 things is out of business. Unless it's lucky, of course. But you can't emulate luck. So your second step is your strategic objective. Clarity, clarity, write it down. You better not get fuzzy talk here. Anybody gives you fuzzy talk here, got a fuzzy mind here. Anybody got a fuzzy mind here is dangerous. Anybody starts you out in a path. Can you imagine when they started us out in Vietnam? Now, exactly what were we here to do? Well, we're not certain. We're stemming the tide. What tide? Well, the tide of communism. How do you stem the tide? I don't know. Just go out there and get shot at. Let's see what happens. And they did, didn't they? See how unclear stuff gets us into trouble? Anybody remember that? See, I'm not a, you know, Vietnam junkie, but it's a great exercise in looking at the lack of a strategic objective. If you're going to war, Win it. Or don't go to war. So I want to ask you to ask yourself to write down on a piece of paper this question. And this question goes back to your primary aim. And this question going back to your primary aim comes to your strategic objective. Because what you're going to discover in these seven things we go through here today are they're all connected. You can't approach them as single events. They are not events. They are a comprehensive, integrated process. And that question is, what do I want? Write it down. What do I want? Not what do I need, but what do I want? And when you look at the strategic objective of the company you are going to work for, just imagine you had the power to do that. Just imagine that you literally had the power to choose between a great company and a job. Just imagine that there are enough companies out there that would enable you to make that choice. See, you got to figure, you got to come from abundance, because if there are no companies like that, we might as well forget about all this, and we might as well just be cynical and go out and do what everybody does, which is give themselves up.
A manager's strategic objective is the company's aim. The company's aim is its strategic objective. So you might say that the company's strategic objective rolls down to the manager and then on down to the technician, whose obligation it is to bring the strategic objective to life in the form of actions which best represent it in the real world of work and results. It is the manager's obligation, it is your obligation to yourself, to first put into question your primary aim in order to create a standard against which you can determine whether or not the company you are considering joining has as its aim something which is in alignment with your aim. Do you see why it's so critical for you to spend some serious time determining what your primary aim is? If you don't, how do you discriminate between the right company and the wrong company? The right company, being a company whose aim serves your aim, is in alignment with your aim, whose aim you in turn can fully serve with a clear conscience. A wrong company is, of course, exactly the opposite. It is a company whose aim has little or nothing to do with what you want, other than money, that is, and the power. But of course, for most of us, power is too rich a food for our everyday taste. No, more often than not, we're talking about survival. Aren't we? Aren't we talking about money and survival? Aren't we talking about the plugging up of fear? But that shouldn't come as a big surprise to you, should it? That most companies are not even interested in your life, in anyone's life for that matter? That they're driven solely by the excitement created by the chase for money and the exhilaration of power, for the fear of not surviving, for the excesses to be derived from getting more from the chase than anyone can reasonably expect is necessary from the chase, for living a full life, let alone what's reasonably desirable? The intense energy of it all is the most seductive thing we have in this life space coming as we are into the 21st century. The seduction of money, the seduction of power. This electric, all-consuming thing, the way in which the world works, the way in which power reveals itself and then asserts itself, the way in which money feeds the passion of the chase, and that's what most businesses are consumed by. The chase, the extraordinarily exciting attraction to more, the intense sexuality of more of this, of more of that, of more of whatever's available, and how come I have to do without? Do you get a taste of this energy? Do you get the feeling of all this? Is this the thing we will continue to do forever? Is this what we intend our lives to be? An insatiable hungry for more stuff, more distraction, more confusion, more onto more onto more? Please hear me. I'm not suggesting for a moment that you and I should begin a campaign to transform the excessive conditions we find around the world in companies both small and large, and that if we could do that, we would suddenly transform the lives of all managers and their employees, and so on and so forth, ad infinitum. God help me. No, I'm not suggesting that at all. But what I am suggesting is that it is up to you and only you to choose where you work very, very carefully. And that not only is it your ethical responsibility to do that for yourself and for everyone else, but your human accountability. That what I'm describing is what it means to be ultimately human, a human being, a being touched by the gift of humanity. Unless, of course, you prefer to live the life of a victim, which means to say a non-human, an ahuman entity left with only the desire, the ability, the vocation of constantly carping about how little meaning you get from the work you do, and if only someone cared about the important things, and if only someone would listen. Well, listen to me. There is only one person who needs to listen to you in order for you to make a difference in your life, and that person is you. Well, let me say, until you make a choice, a life choice, which defines in no uncertain terms the form your life will take, then, and only then, a manager must begin to ask the serious, pointed questions about any company he or she is thinking of working for, what it is the company wants, how it sees itself getting those things, what its beliefs are about work, about people, about money, about the community, about change, about consciousness and conscience, about relationship, about structure and systems and generosity and soul and spirit and time and learning. Yes, especially about learning. What does the company think about learning for everyone in the organization on a continuing basis? How much could it imagine spending for that, for the evolution of its people beyond the organization, beyond the immediacy of the job? Do you see how your primary aim and your strategic objective are so intimately connected to each other? When you understand that a manager on a job search, and every manager is on a job search even when he or she is happily employed, when every manager is looking for a strategic objective already formed in the world, operating in some company which is in perfect or as close to perfect as possible alignment and harmony with your primary aim, how would you recognize it when you first saw it? At first, you would have a feeling, a gut-level experience that something real is beginning to emerge into your life. Attached to the feeling would be a whole set of impressions, visual, audible, emotional. The business would have a look to it which triggers a positive association, deep positive associations, subterraneous associations, the way things are organized, in the reception area, in the conference room, in the office in which you were interviewed, in the restroom, in the halls, the way people looked when they passed you by, the way people felt when they passed you by, the expression on their faces, their openness, their ease, their humor, their passion, their joy. All, every one of them, extraordinary visual components of the total experience, all revealing something deeply implicit which stems from a belief system which exists there, which truly exists there, a lifestyle, a philosophy, a set of rules, a commitment of something, about something, and to something. So the strategic objective of the company you've committed yourself to is a vision of a place in which people mean more than just work. It's a place in which you can experience yourself as becoming someone you're not, and that because you're on the way from where you are to where you're not, the ride, the journey, the trip is not necessarily going to be all that comfortable. But that's to be expected. This is what I think of as the primary purpose of man, to emerge, to unfold, to evolve from one state to another state, from one field of being to another field of being, from one less enlightened state to another more enlightened state. And what could we here in this less enlightened state possibly know about being in a more enlightened state? Well, of course, we couldn't know anything about a place we've never been. The new state is going to always be a surprise, and therefore, given how we are, less enlightened, we're always in this state going to be fearful of what it is we're going to have to give up that we've got, or at least what we believe we've got, in order to get what we don't have, but what we want. But then how in the world do we get to the point of wanting what we don't understand and can't describe because we've never been there and sustain the effort of giving up what we've got in order to get it? That's what the new organization I'm portraying to you here will be committed to. The new organization whose strategic objective its managers will be committed to will create an environment within which, if the job is not everything as it is today, then something must be. And that something is a clear-hearted, if not clear-headed, commitment to transformation, to the process of transformation, to the field of universal being within which we all and all of everything exist as one big happy family, never where we want to be, but always on the way. I hope you and I are in agreement that for a manager to truly experience a grand ease, a great joy, a burgeoning discomfort with a challenging transition from one state to another, and for that to happen in an ordinary business, there must be a huge shift in our consciousness. And for that huge shift to take place, we must continually be put into question. And for us to be open to be continually put into question, we must first put ourselves into question. We must, all of us, be in question at all times. For it's only a person in question who has a question about his or her answers. And isn't that truly what has been called over time a true state of grace? Knowing we don't know the answers, but being in search of them?
We got to organize the work in our business. And there are seven essential functions in your business. Seven essential functions every manager must focus his or her attention on. The first essential function is called the financial management system. The second essential function is the operating management system. The third essential function is the marketing system. The fourth essential function is the CEO or chief executive officer or leadership system. The fifth is lead generation. The sixth is lead conversion. And the seventh is called client fulfillment. So let's talk about financial management system. I want you to write this down. Personal profit center. Personal profit center. Every person in your organization must begin to operate as a personal profit center. You need to have an income statement, an operating P&L for every person in your organization. Every person in your organization must understand the positive and negative impact of what they do every single day in relationship to the profit and loss of your organization. You must tie people to the money. Let me tell you what's true about your organization. Nobody knows. Nobody knows the money. It's the biggest secret in every business. Nobody knows the money. Everybody keeps it a secret. It's killing you. Now, you got to ask yourself the question, how in the world would I create a personal profit center for every individual in my business? That's the question I want you to go home with. I'm not going to give you the answer. That's the question I want you to go home with. Because let me tell you what will happen the minute you figure it out. The minute you figure out the answer to that question, you'll completely understand the entirety of your business in a way you couldn't possibly understand it. So that's one of the demands I'm going to make of you. What else has to be a part of your financial system? Return on investment. I want you to, for the moment, believe that you own the business you're a manager of. You're the chief operating officer, the chief executive officer of the business you're managing. The business you're managing could be anything. Could be finance, could be sales, could be operations. It could be plumbing, it could be heating, it could be anything. It doesn't matter. You are now an entrepreneur, an entrepreneurial manager, an e-myth manager who understands that your business, like any business, must discover the financial reality of your business to serve your customers, whomever they are. They're the suppliers, they're the lenders, they're the customers, they're the employees. They're the four primary influencers of your business's survival or your business's ability to thrive. An e-myth manager is an entrepreneurial manager. An entrepreneurial manager thinks in a completely different way than the manager of any division, any department, anything at all in any kind of business. But effectively, you got to have your primary aim clear because you know what you will do and what you won't do. You have to have your strategic objective clear because until that's clear, you don't know the part you play in it. And until you can begin to design your organization to play that part systemically, you can't get any results that are predictable. So financial management is the financial system. What's the return on investment? What's the return on equity? You're a profit center. Your business, the business you control, must make money. How does it make money? You got to understand that. So there are a whole set of questions about cash flow, about inventory, about time, about all these questions, the process by which you do what you do in order to satisfy certain financial criteria which are established in your financial management system. So I'm not going to give you any more than that, but understand if you begin to think about your business as though it were a franchise, are there other companies that do what you do? Are there other businesses, in other words, who have a department like your department? Many? Not many. Right. So what we're saying here is you're going to become the preeminent provider of what you do in your industry. And people are going to come to you to learn how you do it. Because effectively, you've created a turnkey system, a little franchise, a little prototype, a little absolutely predictable way of doing this, and it didn't matter what the hell anybody else was doing. You understand? Everybody else is nuts. You got to start this whole thing as everybody else is nuts. And that's easy to do because everybody else is nuts. You know, up to this point, you were too. But now you're getting sane. Okay. That's the beauty of this. Isn't that great? I mean, it's terrific. Okay, the operating management system. There are four components, four categories of preference for every business. Four categories of preference. You're now to take this entrepreneurial perspective. You're going to go to work on your business. There are four categories of preference for every business. Visual preferences, emotional preferences, functional preferences, and financial preferences. Visual, emotional, functional, and financial. There are four customers. We just talked about them. That's your employee, your customer, your supplier, and your lender. Each of them has their own visual, emotional, functional, and financial preferences. When you go to work on your business, understand that as a manager, you're going to work on your business, not on the enterprise. You don't manage up. You simply manage down. Right? You don't manage up, you manage down. You don't be concerned about what's going on over there or over there for the moment. You manage down. You got to organize your thinking and tunnel vision. I am now going to focus my attention in creating this perfectly organized pre-production prototype of a mass-producible product called my business. Okay. It's your operating management system. It's called This Is How We Manage Here. What does an operating management system look like? First of all, you understand that an operating management system enables you to manage the process in your business, not the people in your business. This is very, 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 very critical for you to understand. You're not in the business of managing people because people are unmanageable. Didn't we say that? Write it down again. So we manage the process. So effectively, we've got to look at the management system as a system through which the process gets managed. What are the processes in my business? There are four. I call it the hierarchy of systems. The first is called how we do it here. How we do what? Everything. The second is called how we recruit, hire, and train people to do it here. The third is called how we manage it here. And the fourth is called how we improve it here. I want you to think about your business as a core process, which is the turnkey. We call it lead generation, lead conversion, and client fulfillment. Lead generation is what? Lead generation is the result of marketing. Lead generation is the result of marketing. Lead conversion is what? Lead conversion is the result of sales. Client fulfillment is what? Client fulfillment is the result of operations. This process is the continuing process, the turnkey process that grows your business. Lead generation, lead conversion, client fulfillment. This is how we do it here. This is how we do it here. This is how we do it here. This is how we hire and train people to do it here. This is how we manage it here. This is how we improve it here. This continuous process of innovation, quantification, and orchestration. Innovation, quantification, and orchestration of lead generation, lead conversion, and client fulfillment is your whole business. The others' functions, which are the financial management system, operating management system, the marketing system, are what make it possible for you to do this work. So effectively, the financial management system, the operating management system, and the marketing system, and the leadership system are what make it possible for your turnkey system to continue to thrive, to continue to grow, to continue to become more effective, to do what? The promise you make over here to get those leads. Your job is to monitor that system and to improve it continuously. Do you see how simple this is? What if you had a method for growing the business? What if you had a method for converting it into active paying sales? What if you had a method of fulfilling the promise you made every single time? But that's impossible, people say to you. Let me give you an impossible message. What happens when you go to the doctor? You go to the medical. What happens? You wait. Who said that? Did I ask you to say that? Have we talked about it? No. You wait. Don't you wait? You make an appointment for 3, and you get to see him at 3:45. And you sit in a waiting room. Why do they call it a waiting room? Oh, get it? Because you're going to wait. Right? And you get to sit there with other sick people. Pick up magazines they've been reading. You know what I'm saying? Rub it on your face, you know. Then you get to be taken into the room, you know, the real waiting room. This is just, you know, sort of a taste. The real waiting room, you get to get undressed. Sit on a piece of paper. Like a puppy. You understand? And now wait for him to come in. You don't know what to do with your hands because you don't have your magazine anymore. You left it out there. And now you're sitting in a cold room, freezing your butt off, waiting for the doctor to show up, sitting on a piece of paper. Like a puppy. Hear me. And everybody's concerned about medicine. Technology. Technology is not the solution to our medical problem. Conscious physicians is. Can you see the promise being made on time, every time, exactly as promised, or we pay for it? Who else would that be good for? Like a contractor. Has anybody ever done business with a kitchen remodeler? Anybody? You know, you want the kitchen for Thanksgiving, of course. Didn't tell them which one. You know. They're never on time. Ever on time. And it's never the price they said. Right? Why should it be? It's just a bid. Right? Doesn't say it's a promise. Hell, I never promised it would cost that. I just thought it would cost that. But you know how things are. Nothing works. You get the point of lead generation, making a promise? What is lead conversion? Lead conversion is the process through which you provide the rational armament to support the emotional commitment that's made when you've stated that promise. This is an emotional commitment. When you say on time, every time, exactly as promised, or we pay for it, they buy it emotionally. The sales process is simply proving the fact that we can do that. And finally, client fulfillment. Man, when they show up, you better be on time. And if you're not, who's paying for it? You are. And when I say you, I mean the guy who made the promise. So what's the one thing we could do in our business that's impossible to do, but if we were to do it, would transform our business? Here's a perfect example of it. Do you see the system? Do you see how simple it is? Do you see what the manager's job is? It has nothing to do with people. It has to manage the process, to improve the process, to improve the process, to manage the process, to improve the process, to manage the process, to constantly look at the numbers to know exactly what works and what doesn't work, and to make it better, to make it better, to make it better, to make it better. How do you determine how to do that? Very, very simply. You look at what the customer wants. What? Visually, emotionally, functionally, financially. You got it? See what a manager is accountable for? Results. Continually improving the impact your business has on everybody else. So the next is the management system. That's benchmark number 4. Creating a management system. What does a management system look like? Well, as we said earlier, this is how we manage here. So what does a manager do every day? The first thing a manager looks at is the result we're here to produce. The second thing a manager looks at is how we produce results now. The third is how we can improve the process we're using now. The fourth is to test the process improvement. The fifth is to quantify the impact of the improvement. The sixth is, if the impact of the improvement is positive, orchestrate the improvement. By orchestrating the improvement, I mean create an action plan, a system, a benchmark process for doing exactly what it was we just defined. The seventh thing is to train all your people in the successful use of the new orchestrated system. The eighth thing is monitor that use, which goes right back to the beginning again, which is result. Know what the result is, produce the result, see how you produce the results now, how can we improve it, and so forth and so on. And it can on and on and on and on. You got it? Round and round and round and round. It's a constant process, a continuous process for effectively engaging in the process we use. Now, where are your people in all this? Your people are doing it with you. So I want you to see the difference of management focus in what I'm talking about for the E-Myth manager and the focus of every other manager in the world. Every manager in the world is trying to manage people. When you try to manage a person, you create a polar relationship. What I mean by a polar relationship is the person becomes an object. So the person as an object. The manager now has created an object out of the person he or she is trying to manage. The minute you create an object out of the person you're trying to manage, you become an object of the person. And what is that called in common parlance? Us and them. Has anybody ever heard of that before? Us and them. The minute you create an us and them environment, which means object to object, you create what? Resistance. And the minute you create resistance, what happens? You create more resistance and more resistance. And that's why it's impossible to manage people. People hate to be objects. And so effectively, it doesn't work. Never has worked, can't work. People are unmanageable. You can't manage them. The only thing you can do is to gain an agreement from your people to manage the process. So effectively, what that looks like is something other again. It's your people, it's your manager, and they're focused on the same thing, which is what? The process. So now, instead of looking at each other, we're looking at it. And let me tell you what happens in an organization when that begins to take hold, understanding there are a whole bunch of other things that have to be in place for this to work. What happens in an organization in which people were attracted to the organization in the right way, and in which people were developed in the organization in the right way, and in which people are committed to the strategic objective of the organization for the right reasons. Effectively, what happens is the tension between management and subordinate, management and employee, management and technician, completely disappears. Now, I don't know whether you can even believe that or imagine that, given everybody's experience. What I'm saying, us in them, completely goes away. Suddenly, energy begins to be discovered in the improvement of the process by which everybody begins to improve their own personal performance, their own personal profit center. Essentially, what happens, ladies and gentlemen, is you begin to realize what it truly means for people to take personal responsibility for being in the environment to produce a singular result, because they buy into the result, whole hog plus the postage. And so what I'm suggesting is managers can't manage people, because by trying to do so, they invariably increase the amount of resistance, and the more resistance that's created, the less ease is allowed, and the less ease that exists, the more conflict is created, and the more conflict is created, the more fragmented the organization becomes, and the more fragmented the organization becomes, the more dysfunctional it becomes, and so forth and so forth and so forth and so on. So the manager of the future is going to learn how to manage process and to gauge people in the business in that process.
I hate to disappoint you, but an organization chart is not what you think it is. An organization chart is first and foremost a way of thinking about your business, not a way of conducting your business. An organization chart is a strategy, a method of defining not only the business you're in, but how you're going to do the business you're in. And what about that way is going to differentiate your business from everyone else's business. An organization chart is a conclusion arrived at from the invention of original way of surprising the heck out of your customers and your people. There are 7 essential functions of every business: marketing, management, money, lead generation, lead conversion, client fulfillment, and your role, the role of the CEO, which is, of course, the role every manager plays, no matter where he or she resides in the business, which is, of course, the chief executive officer of his or her area of accountability, which also is, of course, the key leadership role in your part of the business, which is the role which defines at the outset this strategy, this conclusion, this unique selling proposition proposition, which defines the pointedly concrete method by which your business starts and completes and then starts and completes its relationship with everyone who comes into contact with your business over and over and over again. What is the promise and process of your business? That's the essence of your organization chart. It defines the way your business fulfills its aim. For example, imagine any organization, national in scope. It has a large number of business units, say retail stores, and it needs to create a branded performance, a personality which is uniquely its own, and it is asking the question, how does it organize itself in order to make certain that these stores do exactly what needs to be done in order to achieve that objective? In other words, how does it control the operating reality of the stores? Well, the decision could go in any number of directions. It could decide that the only way to achieve the result it wants is by creating a network of district managers and regional managers. The district managers to make certain that the stores look, act, and feel the way they need to by, of course, keeping close tabs on the store managers, by walking into the stores unexpectedly to make certain that the store managers are doing what they're supposed to be doing, by checking up and so forth as managers are expected to do. The regional managers are there to make certain the district managers are doing their job, and through a whole series of checks and balances, the regional managers check up on the district managers. But then, given this organizational strategy, there need to be divisional managers to whom the regional managers report, and so forth and so on. You can see how this develops, can't you? You can see that the frame of reference in this type of organization produces a mindset which says that the way you organize such a network of stores is to make certain that you can touch and feel and see everything and everyone. Because if you can't do that, you can't trust the stores will look, act, and feel the way they need to achieve your objective. But one could just as easily organize the business in a completely different way. One could organize the business from the bottom up rather than the top down. One could say, well, let's see now. How do I engage the people in each store so that they are more concerned about how it does business than anyone else is? How do I drive the organization from the bottom rather than from the top so that not only don't I have to be concerned about each and every store, but even more to the point, I have to be more concerned about how people at the top are responding to an increased demand from the bottom? Not the demands we get in an ordinary organization. Not the demands about give me more, more money, more perks, more time off, more power, but the demands which are unexpected in today's organization. Give me more information. Give me more autonomy. Give me more of a relationship with others in the organization. Give us more of what you spoke of at the beginning of this deal. More learning, more growth, more challenge, more responsibility. Imagine an organization like that. But not only that, could you imagine an organization in which the people who were asking for more life in the fullest sense of the word were asking not to be given something, but to have the demands increased, to be expected to rise to the occasion. In fact, expected to create the occasion to which they would arise. So organization development is the creation of a new organization which most efficiently and effectively moves the energy through people and things, through processes and systems, through the stream of nows to make results happen in a powerfully consistent and joyful way. Let me give you a personal example of this. We have a function within the eMyth Academy called RRRT, RRRT. Which stands for the right response real time. It sits at the front end of the process called lead conversion. Lead conversion is the function which translates inquiries into the academy into an appropriate result. It's a result which provides the person who's making the inquiry with a response which is completely consistent with their degree of what we call at the academy trustability. Some people have high trustability, some almost no trustability. But whatever level of trustability they've got, that's where RRRT is supposed to meet them. So the result of RRRT is to provide the right response in real time, e.g., now. Not later, but now. So we have organized the entire function of RRRT around a belief, which is an idea, that everyone who calls us at the academy is not a prospective client, but someone requesting service. And in order for them to get the service they're requesting, exactly when they request it, and in exact accordance with who they are and how they feel and what issues are grinding them into dust in their business at this particular time, we must have a system to discover what their level of trustability is. And once discovered, be able to identify exactly what service would be exactly the right thing for each and every one of them right now. And our belief is that they'll tell us everything we need to know. That everyone calling in to the academy, every single one of them, will be able to take the appropriate step forward from where they were when they called to where they want to be and what they hoped we would be able to help them accomplish. Otherwise, why would they have called? Which means to say that in order to organize your business and the functions within your business to fulfill the strategic objective of your business while fulfilling your primary aim, you must begin to think about ends and means, which is the structure of everything you do in your business in a completely different way than you're accustomed to thinking about them. Just the name RRRT, Right Response Real Time, tells you what our commitment is. Just the name of the form upon which all inquiries were recorded went from prospect record form to request for service form. Do you see how different those two forms are? One is recording data about a prospect. The other is providing information about a result in response to a request for service. The first form, prospect record form, records data about someone who might become a client. The second form, request for service, records information about how well we delivered results to someone who, from the moment they called us, were already a client. Results from the first mindset were measured as sales effectiveness. Results from the second mindset, request for service, were measured as client services effectiveness. In short, in the latter case, everyone who calls is a client. Can you see the powerful difference? It's not just rhetoric. Do you see that a system is the manifestation of an idea? That organizational development is nothing more or less than thinking about the end product of your business, what it is your business is committed to do, and how, and at what cost, and for what purpose, to become a living organism which has a profoundly unique impact upon people, upon how they feel, upon what they walk away with when they leave your company? And I'm not just talking about your customers. I'm talking about your people. I'm talking about you. And how to get from then to here, from the result to the beginning of the result, from the finished product of your efforts to the invention of the first, then the second, then the third, then the fourth step in the process of producing that result. And then it is critical you understand this, that once you get this thought, that this thing called organization is all about thinking, about ideas, that ideas are the essence of relating to your creations, your life, your business, your work, other people, the trees in your yard, your dog on the porch. If you have no idea what all this means, how can you relate to it? I suggest you can't. And it's just because we do such an abysmally poor job of understanding the power of ideas in the formulation of our lives, our work, our business, our relationships, our organizations, that they all fail to give us what we truly want, an impassioned state of being. Which brings us back to the creation of an organization chart for the business we manage. The organization chart is the structure we create in the world to manifest the fluid interactions of work, which in their interactions with each other and the world create a stunningly original experience for everyone who comes into contact with them, which create over and over and over again an opportunity for everyone to experience an impassioned state of being.